We might say the meanest things. Sometimes we're not much company. There's no rearranging. Our writing remains the same. We remain the same. And as far as we're concerned, you belong to us. Pop Do.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 6 of the Pop Dose podcast, or as I like to call it, the Rat Pack, but without the mob ties or talent. And here to play Dino and Sammy to my Frank are my co-hosts, Jeff Giles and Jason Hare. Gentlemen.
Sup, fuckers?
Ooh, Jason got it first.
That was Jeff.
That was?
Wow.
That was, you know, Jeff.
Dave, if you don't know me by now,
you will never know him.
What an apt way to begin the show.
I just want to say, Acoustic 80s, everybody.
That's right, Acoustic 80s.
Acoustic 80s, Acoustic 80s. I don't know if you guys know, I play in a band called Acoustic 80s.
Really? Tell me more.
I'll pepper it throughout the episode.
I can't wait.
For those who don't know, a very nice commenter said, we get it. You play in an Acoustic 80s band. We get it. So I will not be mentioning Acoustic 80s the rest of this episode.
I will not be that rude, because that person, he said he liked my old show better than this one, so thank you very much to that commenter.
Why, I personally don't like him very much.
I do mention it a lot, so that's it for the episode. We have bigger and better things to talk about.
Acoustic 90s.
That's true. Or electric 70s.
Okay, as Jason said, we do have some more important things to talk about, and let me explain. Here we like to think that we toe the line between being entertaining and being offensive, and on today's show we may very well trip over that line like Jason does on so many of his acting jobs. Thank you. Ever since episode 2, and not counting that bonus show we did a few weeks ago, we've always focused on a particular holiday. You know, Halloween, Thanksgiving, or Christmas, and we wanted to continue that motif in February, but really the only holiday is Valentine's Day, and on the last show we already heard about how Jason and Jeff met and fell in love, so we really couldn't repeat that. However, February is also Black History Month. Personally, I agree with Larry Wilmore of The Daily Show when he said that Black History Month makes up for centuries of oppression with 28 days of trivia, but we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that African Americans have been responsible for so much of our pop culture history. So, our topic for today, awesome black people. And what better way to start than with the whitest guy in the room, Jason.
Oh.
You're tuning in to Jason Hare.
What? Oh, me. Fuck. What was I going to talk? Oh, right. Got it. Stevie Wonder. My favorite black person.
Even I love more him. Favoriter than Lionel Richie?
Michael McDonald? Oh, I thought you were going to say Michael McDonald. Yes, I think even more favoriter than Lionel Richie.
That actually surprises me.
It's close. I guess it's close. I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned it. But, I mean, and it seems so cliche to say that, you know, Stevie Wonder is your favorite anything, because, you know, what's bad about Stevie Wonder? But I thought, like, what's the one thing I could really highlight that maybe doesn't get as much highlighting about why he's so awesome? And I think it's because his vocal range and the tone of his voice hasn't really changed since, like, the 70s. Like, that man still hits every note he hit back then, even higher. He still sounds exactly the same. He's some kind of superhuman. I don't know how he does it. Like when he, like, I don't know if you guys saw him on the Hope for Haiti Now telethon, mm-hmm. but the way he sang Bridge Over Troubled Water, and the guy's just amazing. I'm so glad he's touring again. I think I saw, I've kind of sworn off concerts for a while because I'm out of money, but I think I've seen him 3 times in the past 2-3 years or so. So, and his recent album, A Time to Love. I mean, you can't compare anything that he does now with the stuff in the... Shut up. Did you listen to it?
Of course I listened to it.
And what'd you think? Well, okay.
I think it sucked. He is superhuman, but I wish that his superhuman powers still extended to his songwriting.
Well, I think there are a few very good songs on there. What are you going to, you know, what's he going to do? Everyone's going to compare everything that he does to anything between 1970 and 1976. But there were a few songs on there that I thought, there were a bunch of bad songs, but I thought there were a few really good songs on there as well.
Of course people are going to compare things, but he could record stuff that actually had a little bit of energy. He hasn't done that, God, decades.
I'm looking at the track list and trying to think which tracks that I thought were really good that did have energy, so I can tell you to go fuck yourself. I liked Positivity a lot. I liked Can't Imagine Love Without You. I loved If Your Love Cannot Be Moved. And I loved Jeff Giles is a Giant Douchebag. That was a bonus track. That was on the deluxe edition.
The B-side to the remix of Part-Time Lover.
I didn't actually hear this album, but did he write anything from a plant's perspective again?
I don't believe he did. That's like his one misstep, you know, Journey to the Secret Life of Plants.
One misstep? What about I Just Called to Say I Love You?
You know, someone mentioned to me the other day, not the other day, a while ago, someone said to me, you know, if it wasn't Stevie Wonder who had recorded this song, you wouldn't be hating on it as much as you do. And I thought, that's actually kind of true.
Really?
Plus, it's got a cha-cha-cha ending. And I love anything that ends with a cha-cha-cha ending.
I think the opposite. I think if Stevie Wonder hadn't been the one to record it, we wouldn't be hearing it anymore, and people would have hated it instantly, and it wouldn't have become a part of pop culture.
Right.
I'm not saying that the man hasn't done some bad stuff, but I'm saying that when he goes out and plays in concert, he still sounds unbelievable.
Definitely.
And you know, we've had this discussion. You know, do you forgive the sins of the present based on the amazing things that they've done in the past?
Well, it depends on how far back the sins of the present go. I think he's been making bad music since... When did the Woman in Red soundtrack come out? 83?
85. Like
that, yeah. No, 85 was 84. In Square Circle, wasn't it?
84 then. No, in Square Circle... Oh, I was going to say that was 86, but that was Characters. No, that was 87. I don't know. Clearly, I don't know.
Anyway, point is, it's been a long time. It's been like 25 years.
Since he did anything good?
I think so.
I disagree.
I don't think it would be that hard. I think just like use some real instruments, Steve. Let's hear you sweat a little bit.
I don't think you want to hear or see Stevie Wonder sweat. And B, you know, I think the real tragedy, not a tragedy, but the real sad thing here is that he's got thousands and thousands of songs just like locked up in his vault. Stuff that he recorded, you know, every day in the 70s that didn't make it onto albums.
Well, let's hear those.
Every once in a while, if you go on YouTube, you can find a few unreleased tracks, you know, because I think he'll write a song, and if he happens to have a concert or a TV appearance, something coming up, he'll just play that. Like, he'll just be like, oh, I just wrote this, and he plays it and whatever. But then he forgets about it, or he just decides not to put it on an album. I think the other problem is that he took so long in between recording albums that when he does release something... You know, there's all this pressure behind it.
I know. I wish he and Prince would trade places.
Stevie Wonder released more stuff and Prince released less?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been going through those Prince tracks that were up there on the Pop Does guy, and it's like something that's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Couldn't you have just, like, gotten laid that day and stayed in bed?
Isn't there a story about Billy Joel? We'll tie in two of your heroes here. Isn't there a story about Billy Joel meeting up with Stevie Wonder and Stevie bragging that he writes a song every day?
I don't know, but it sounds like you know the story, so you should tell it. I don't know.
Well, I remember this, but I could be remembering it wrong. I thought that during one of his lecture circuit tours, he told this story about meeting Stevie Wonder and Stevie saying, you know... I think that the joke was, hi, I'm Stevie Wonder, I write a song a day, or something like that. And Billy's retort, and I can't remember if it was to Stevie or just to the audience, but his retort was, you know, well, how many of them are any good?
Doesn't matter.
Oh.
It's not that he releases or records them, it's that he's constantly working on what he's doing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, maybe if Billy wrote a song a day, we'd have something right. Better than River of Dreams.
Instead of a half-assed classical record every 10 years.
And traffic accidents.
it would keep them off the road.
I'm so disappointed in Billy Joel. I feel like he's become exactly what he did. He always said he was not going to become, which was like, I mean, he said he would never become a Vegas act, but that's essentially what he is. I mean, he's, you know, he tours and he's got nothing past 1993 to show for it.
Right.
I don't know how you can argue with the kind of talent that gave us Christmas in Fallujah.
I knew you were going to bring that up. But anyway, Stevie Wonder, regardless of the bad stuff that he's recorded and released, I feel like all that goes away for me when I hear him live or I go to see him in concert or whatever.
Wasn't the last time you saw him, didn't you stay in the parking lot?
That was the first of three. That was the time I came up to see you for the first time. I stopped in Boston and was convinced that I would just get tickets outside the venue at the last minute, because that almost always works for me, and it didn't work this time. So it was an outdoor concert, so my brother and I stood outside and listened to a good portion of the concert. And then he played The Garden, and I went to see him at The Garden, and then he played Jones Beach, and I went to saw him there. And they were both fantastic concerts. I mean, the man doesn't let up. He's on stage for the 2 hours, and he's just hit after hit after hit. Or he just comes up with stuff on the fly, and the band just has to follow him. They did a Chick Corea tune when I saw him at Jones Beach, and it was unbelievable.
Wow. That is pretty cool.
He's great. He's amazing. And I'll, you know, he's out there. He hasn't changed the keys of his song because he doesn't have to. He's just still sounds so amazing. So, Stevie Wonder, you are my favorite black person.
Stevie Wonder is a musical genius.
Yeah, I think that you definitely do give him a little bit more slack because the stuff he did in the 70s. If nothing else, you always want to hear him, what he's doing. He's not like somebody who...
That's definitely true.
You know, you always know that there's, in some way on something new that he does, there's always going to be a melodic passage that just makes you go, wow, how the hell did he come up with that, even if the lyrics are usually pretty crappy.
Excellent point.
Yeah, I'll always buy his new records, even though I know they're not going to be very good.
Yeah, and the coolest thing for me is that basically he's one of the two people who got his way with Berry Gordy, who is very distinctly not on my list of awesome black people, by the way. Because the story was that as he was in 70, his contract was coming up because he was no longer a minor. He was turning 21.
Right.
And Gordy just controlled everything. And Stevie's like, you really can't do this without me. He actually, you know, forced Gordy into negotiations with nobody, which nobody ever did before. And he won. And then what comes out, you know, that stretch between Music in My Mind and Songs in the Key of Life, which is, you know, the greatest series of albums by anybody, no less an R&B artist.
Right. Berry Gordy was very much against him releasing a double album for Songs in the Key of Life. And I will say there are some songs on Songs in the Key of Life that aren't great either.
Yeah.
You know, there are a few songs on there that I when I originally ripped my CD to iTunes, I didn't include those songs because I was like, I'm never going to have an urge to hear All Day Sucka or whatever, you know. But yeah, that's a great point. You know, he really pushed for what he believed in back then. And yeah. All those albums, like you said, from Music in My Mind forward.
Yeah. Music in My Mind,
Talking Book, Fulfilling His First Finale, Inner Visions, yeah.
The freakish thing about Songs in the Key of Life was that album was delayed because Stevie was unhappy with the artwork.
It was because of the artwork?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Allegedly. Huh. As if any album could have a worse cover than Songs in the Key of Life to begin with.
Yeah. Did I ever send you Toto's cover of Living for the City?
Oh, God, no.
Yes. I don't know if you did. I feel like you might have, but it's not in my collection, which makes
We have to link to it in the show notes, I think.
White guys from L.A. singing a song about the black experience in New York.
That's right.
Do we have to include it in the show notes? Is that now a requirement? How about we include... Why don't we throw in Barry Manilow's cover of I Just Called to Say I Love You?
You know, I heard some samples from his new one yesterday.
Barry Manilow?
Yeah, lordy, lordy, lordy. It's the... You know, because he's been doing that greatest love songs of the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
And so the new one is the greatest love songs of all time.
Doesn't it bother anybody else that Barry Manilow and Rod Stewart are on the same career trajectory?
Yeah, and making tons of money at it.
I know, right? Well, who's buying albums these days?
old people be buying records.
Old people. It's all old people. That's right.
That's right.
All right, let's see. In our tribute to black people, we have gotten, 25 minutes into this, and we have talked about Billy Joel, Barry Manilow, and referenced Jeff's review of a Neil Sedaka record. Good job, black people.
You think Stevie will ever get around to cutting these shitty, you know, love songs of the whatever? You know, will he ever do a songbook record?
No.
I don't think so.
Because as long as he... If he is still writing a song a day, then there's no reason for him not to release it. Because at least even if it doesn't sell, he gets the publishing.
Yeah, he's not out of ideas. Yeah, I don't think he's out of ideas. I think he could tour forever and always have... But then again, so could Barry Manilow. So
yeah, I don't think Barry Manilow's out of ideas. I think he just knows it's easy and it makes money. So why not?
I don't know. I don't think I've seen anything yet in Stevie Wonder's career that seems to have been the easy way out.
All right.
Even if you're talking about albums like A Time to Love or whatever, I think that he still believes, you know, whether we think it's, you know, not good or whatever, I think he ultimately believes in every song he puts out.
Right.
So there's something to be said for that. You know, he's got conviction, you know, behind what he's doing, even if we think it sucks. Whereas you know that Barry Manilow is phoning it in.
Well, I almost chose Barack Obama and Michael Jackson because they single-handedly kept me from being homeless last year. Like Jason, I decided to go with a hero from my childhood and growing up a Yankees fan in the mid to late 70s. There's only one word for that. Reggie. Reggie Jackson, Mr. October. Best thing about him was that he was just never boring to watch. You know, even especially when he was in a slump. Not just when he was doing well, but when he was in a slump, it was incredible because he would just swing and miss so hard that the momentum would send him spinning halfway down the first baseline. And you know, he was a really horrible right fielder too. And I remember in the 1981 World Series when he just like misplayed a ball off his chest. It was just in game 3 or game 4, and it was just absolutely horrible. But when he came through, it was amazing. And that kind of happened more often than not. And when you're a kid and your favorite team wins championships, you know, you gravitate towards your favorite players, even when they are always causing controversy. I mean, he came into the team in 77 with this really arrogant attitude, bad-mouthing Thurman Munson, who was not only the team captain but also the reigning MVP of the American League. And you know, there was a scene a few months into the season where they got into a shoving match in the dugout, where Billy Martin and Reggie got into a shoving match in the middle of a game in a dugout in Fenway Park because Billy pulled him for not hustling after a fly ball. And I used to read all those books that came out about the from the ex-players and in the Bronx by Spark Lyle. I think there was a really great story. The thing with Reggie was he's also a really smart guy, and you know, really outspoken. And he used to brag to his teammates about how smart he was. And one time Mickey Rivers said, you know, if you stopped reading and writing and started hitting, we'd be a lot better off. I mean, these days you know, bragging and trash talking is kind of accepted as part of the modern athlete, and as long as you deliver, you can get away with it, which is why Fred Smoot cracks me up. But back then, it was just Reggie and Muhammad Ali, who was really the first guy to do all that. I almost actually chose Ali because I remember watching his fights on TV, but they were, you know, towards the end of his career when he really wasn't the greatest anymore. So I can't say that I grew up with him like I did with Reggie, but either one of those guys were huge in my life in the mid 70s.
I was a Mets fan, so I didn't have much experience with Reggie Jackson other than knowing that he had a phenomenal mustache.
And still does.
Did you ever see Basketball?
I didn't see it, no.
Yes, I saw Basketball. What? I don't remember anything from that movie other than that I hated it.
I absolutely love that movie. You should... I know I'm one of the only people. It's the Trey Parker, Matt Stone movie. I just think that movie is so funny. I'll watch it anytime. And anyway, Reggie Jackson's in it. Trey Parker's character, or whatever, grows up like loving, you know, Reggie Jackson or something. And he catches one of his home run balls or something in the World Series or something like that. And there's a scene, you know, it's like that's why he was inspired to become an athlete or something. And then near the end of the movie, Reggie Jackson comes to one of his games or something, and one of his basketball games or something, and he's like, you know, he's talking about how much he remembers hitting those balls. He's like, I still have two of them. Some asshole made off with a third or whatever. And, you know, and Trey Parker's pretending that he doesn't, you know, he doesn't know anything about it. And so they say goodbye, and then Reggie Jackson turns back to him and goes, oh, hey, by the way. And Trey Parker looks at him and goes, I don't have your fucking ball. It's funnier in the movie. You got to go see the movie. That's all I know of Reggie.
There was also the Naked Gun, where he was the...
That's right.
Where he was... I forgot about like that until
robot.
You mentioned that. The robot who was assigned to kill the queen. And then some fat guy falls on his face and then saves the country. But I think Reggie also kind of wound up having a sense of humor about himself, which was pretty cool. I remember whenever Stuttering John on Howard Stern would go to interview ex-professional athletes or ex-baseball players, one of the questions that he would ask was, did you ever fart in the catcher's face? And Ted Williams took offense to it and threw him out. But Reggie Jackson said, yes, and if you stick around longer, I'll fart in yours, too.
Nice.
I was thinking about when he asked Jim Abbott if he could shuffle a deck of cards. That's like the greatest interview question of all time. What balls?
Ouch.
Jason doesn't know who Jim Abbott is, so we should probably tell him.
He was a pitcher who was born with one hand.
Now I get the joke.
Yeah. And he got a no hit, and he actually got a base hit in the World Series, which was even cooler.
I didn't know Reggie tried to buy the Angels with Gene Autry's wife, widow, I guess. Now
you must be on Wikipedia.
Yes, I am.
I think I remember hearing that. Now that I think about it, because he was very much at the center of the trying to get more minority involvement in front offices.
I honestly don't. I mean, my dad is a huge Yankees fan. I think I told you his license plate is NY7 for Mantle. But you know, when I was growing up, it was baseball in the 80s, and what I remember Reggie most for is his car dealerships out in California.
Oh, see, I didn't know that, because that he had those, because I wasn't out in California. Okay, did he appear in the TV commercials?
I think so. I mean, it was a long time ago, but yeah, I think he did.
That'd be awesome.
Come on down to Reggie Jackson Chevrolet.
Yeah.
He was a trendsetter, you know. All kinds of washed-up athletes do that car dealership thing now.
Yeah, like Brad Benson. I don't know if Jason's heard of this.
I have not.
It's pretty funny. Brad Benson. It might only be a Jersey thing. Brad Benson was an offensive lineman for the Giants in the 80s, and he has these radio commercials where he basically comes like across as like a right-wing Jersey asshole.
Uh huh.
And it's not. They're not funny at all.
Yeah, okay. I looked up Reggie Jackson car commercials, but I'm not finding anything, sadly.
Damn.
I know, what a shame, right? What a shame.
Anything is better than doing Subway commercials.
Like Michael Strahan and Justin Tuck?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. But the car dealerships, now when you're talking about like LA car dealerships and ex-athletes, it's making me think of Men of a Certain Age.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys been watching that show?
Yeah, every week.
Love it.
Me too. I'm 1 week behind, so don't tell me about this past episode, but I love that show.
And nothing really happened in the last episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
The last one I saw was the one where they where he went on the date and the whole episode was the flashback.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great episode.
They're all so fun. Ray Romano's great. I mean, they're all great.
Yeah.
They're all very good. The only character I'm not too crazy about is the bookie.
Why?
I feel like it's a very sitcom-y thing to do.
It's kind of an atypical bookie, you know? Like, he comes, you see him, the first time you see him, it's supposed to be, you know, he's kind of threatening, but, like, he's...
Right.
His business is co-owned with his mom.
Right, but once they established that, I'm like, and I thought like kind of having him in the episode to see if like you could see his shorts behind the, when he's sitting in his boxers behind. I mean, that was fine, but I thought like, okay, can it be another character? Like, why is it that guy? You know?
What do? They go out in the woods to bury a possum or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, that's enough. That's in the first episode.
But yeah, it's a great show, and I'm glad to see. I think I saw that it's been renewed already.
Oh, good.
Which is cool.
Well, what else do they have?
Yeah.
Jeff Jives.
Okay, Jeff.
What?
Go.
What do you want, Dave?
I want your sweet, sweet love.
Get in line, baby.
That's right. Get in line. We talked about this subject, and it's very inappropriate and doesn't totally fit what we're talking about. But the first thing I thought of was when I was very small, I lived in upstate Jersey in an area that...
You still are very small.
Hey.
Sorry. So what my mom told me. I went there first.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm sorry, when you were very small.
When I was very young.
You're not that.
We lived in upstate Jersey. The area that we lived in was really white. It was so white that...
How was it?
How white was it? we had a house full of albinos living down the street from us. Which sounds like the punchline to a really terrible joke, but it's true. We really did. But my mom had one black friend who had a son. And the first time I met him, I think I was 3 or 4. And he walked into the house, and I yelled out, "You're Roosevelt Franklin." And for those of you who... I don't think he's really on the show anymore. So for those of you who didn't watch Sesame Street in the 70s, Roosevelt Franklin was the show's token black puppet, who was so token.
How token was he? Sorry, you keep setting him up.
You're on the ball today.
You keep setting him up.
I looked him up on Wikipedia, and there's an album cover for one of those Sesame Street records that I think it's called Roosevelt Franklin, Gordon's Friend on Sesame Street. I think if you look it up right now...
Yeah, I see it. Why do you have to be Gordon's friend? Why couldn't it be Bob's friend?
Roosevelt Franklin goes at the top of my list of awesome black people.
Because he's actually purple.
Yep. I guess they thought that was close enough.
He's an intelligent boy who often speaks in rhyme or scat.
Somebody should really think about changing the word boy there. That just looks wrong.
I didn't even read that. I only got as far as the album cover. That was enough.
That cover is pretty fucking awesome. I gotta say.
I wonder if Gordon was still smiling after he found out what they called the record.
Well, that's not the original. That's the first Gordon.
No. What is it?
Yes. That's not Gordon. That's Gordon number one.
I'm not looking at it right now.
Look at it.
I know the first Gordon had hair.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, he was it from until like the early 70s, and then the bald guy took over.
Scatman Crothers?
No, I'm sorry. I'm looking it up now. There's someone in between him who I don't remember at all. Hal Miller, no, Roscoe Orman, or Orman, I guess, is right. He's the one who played. He played Gordon from 73 to present.
This is the guy that was from 69 to 72. Not only did Robinson play Gordon, but he also provided the voice of the puppet, Roosevelt Franklin.
So that's why he was Gordon's friend. I wish the title had been like Roosevelt Franklin.
They're making him work twice as hard for his money.
I think it would be funny if the title had been Roosevelt Franklin, Gordon's special friend from Sesame Street. Or, wait, I got even better. Roosevelt Franklin, Gordon's black friend from Sesame Street. I mean, come on. Let's just say what you're saying. Like, why do you have to say Gordon's friend from Sesame Street? Like, if you put this guy next to a puppet, someone's going to think it's from something other than Sesame Street? Like, come on.
Well, what strikes me is, like, when you look back at, you know, those videos of how urban America was portrayed in children's TV back then, it was just so much grittier than today. You know, like, compare the Hispanic kids on Zoom with Dora the Explorer. You know? it's just no contest. And, you know, we were talking about Stevie just before, and, you know, you think of the classic clip of him singing Superstition and how the band are dressed.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't see that on children's TV today.
Yeah.
You know, and I was also, because I was trying to see if, you know, look for videos of Roosevelt Franklin, and I found a clip of Richard Pryor doing the alphabet on Sesame Street.
Wow, that must have been a very nervous day on the set of Sesame Street.
Yeah. I'm sure he taught Big Bird a few new words.
Freebasing with Snuffleupagus.
The whole point of the show in the beginning, I think, was for urban kids, though, right?
Right, because they didn't to help out with their education. Yeah, I mean, that's how we all learned to count from 1 to 10 in Spanish, was from Sesame Street.
I was watching Via Alegre when I
learned it from Jeff's mom, who told me I had to count to 10 so she had time to shave her legs. I'd count to 10, and then she needed an extra 10 seconds. She'd be like, en español.
All this talk about moms reminds me. I almost forgot. Your mom has been asking me to tell you something for months. She's afraid to tell you. And actually, it goes really well with the subject of today's show. Are you ready? Are you sitting down? Your mom wants me to tell you that your father is not who you thought he was. Your real dad is Jimmy Walker from the television sitcom hit Good Times. So now I guess technically I can put you on my list of awesome black people.
I'm honored.
Because Jimmy Walker is your dad.
Wait a second. Are you talking to me or Jason? Because my mom also slept with Jimmy J.J. Walker.
I was talking to Jason, but hey, now you guys could be brothers.
Oh, no.
Well, it would make sense.
Brothers from other mothers. Let me hear you both say dynamite.
Dynamite!
I will not be reduced. Hey, Jeff, how do you feel about Franklin Delano Bluth?
I loved it. I wonder how many people... I guess this goes for pretty much any joke on that show, but I wonder how many people got that. That, it, you know, it was a callback to Franklin Roosevelt.
For our listeners... Yeah, for our listeners, we're talking about the show Arrested Development. And Job, played by Will Arnett, he had a puppet that was based on Roosevelt Franklin, named Franklin Delano Bluth.
And wearing a sweatsuit and still talking in 70s jive.
Franklin... The puppet's bio on Wikipedia starts with, Franklin Delano Bluth is Job's black puppet.
Yeah. Well, he wore a shirt in the last episode, Franklin did, that said, George Bush doesn't care about black puppets. And remember his album,
yes,
too?
Franklin Comes Alive.
The duet, it ain't easy being white, it ain't easy being brown. There's so much pressure to be bright, I got children all around town.
I have to go watch that show for the fifth time.
Yeah.
I adore that show.
I love Franklin. It was the greatest.
It's funny that you mentioned, you know, Franklin Delano Bluth is Job's black puppet, because that should have been the title. That should have been the title of the Roosevelt Franklin album. Gordon's black puppet on Sesame Street. So I wonder why they phased out Roosevelt Franklin. Because it says on the Wikipedia, he began to appear less frequently in episodes created after the mid-70s until he was no longer was on the series.
Racism, duh.
Gentrification, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, Sesame Street got gentrified.
Okay.
Sesame Street got gentrified.
Just thought I would bring it up as a question.
And then Mr. Hooper died and, you know, there were no more Jews on the show?
I never associated Mr. Hooper with being Jewish.
Yeah, neither did I.
Oh, yeah, he definitely
Hooper was a Jewish name.
No, there were episodes where he explained Judaism.
He did?
Holy shit.
A very special episode of Sesame Street. The Jews come to Sesame Street.
You guys are going to send me straight to YouTube for the rest of the day looking up classic episodes of Sesame Street.
Well, you have the old school box sets, yeah?
Yeah, I do.
I have volume 1 and volume 2, but I haven't watched all of them.
Have you watched any of them?
A little bit of the first one. The second one's still.
I love how the box starts with a warning.
I don't remember that. What is the warning?
You know, I forget exactly what it says, but it's something along the lines of, you know, this was supposed to be educational for kids in the late 60s and early 70s. It may not be up to the standards of today's children. And it's basically a warning saying, you know, don't look to this to teach your kids, which made me very sad and also made me laugh at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't remember that. That's funny.
This broadcast is probably endorsed by 5-time Grammy Award winner Michael McDonald.
And now we're going to do something we've never done on the Pop Dose podcast. We have a very special guest, and contrary to popular belief, we at Pop Dose are not just a bunch of white guys. We have our own awesome black person on the staff, the Hootie to our blowfish, if you will, and he's joining us today, Mike Heiliger. Welcome to the Pop Dose podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. Good to be here.
We can't afford like a soundtrack
audience.
Of like wild applause, right? So it's just Jeff and I clapping to the side of the microphone.
Or we could put the Wilhelm scream on there.
No. I will say it's not the first time that Darius Rucker and I have been mentioned in the same sentence before.
I saw you were taking part in Facebook Doppelganger Week, and you changed your profile picture to Hootie.
Yep, I did.
That's what got me the opportunity to think that when I saw you, I looked at your Facebook page and I'm like, oh, there's Darius. I'm like, oh yeah, he's the Hootie to our blowfish. There you go.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome to the show. It's nice to have you. It's nice to have our very first guest.
I'm glad to add a little color to the podcast here.
Wah wah wah.
And Mike, we invited you here for a reason, and I'm gonna let Jeff take it from here.
That's right. We're gonna present Mike with an award. Mike, no score in 2 years ago, I had a dream about starting a website where people would talk about pop culture. Unfortunately, all of them were white. You changed that, and to thank you for it, we're here today to present you with the first Pop Dose Michael McDonald Award for Racial Diversity.
Wow, that's awesome. I don't get applause for that? Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mike!
That's right.
Is Kanye going to call in and like interrupt my speech or anything like that?
How do you feel?
It's a great honor. I don't know what to
you
say.
You feel diverse?
I feel very diverse. It's a great feeling.
Mike, who would be your nominee for favorite black person? You can nominate yourself if you want.
My nominee for favorite black person. Wow, that's kind of hard for me to decide off the cuff. There's so many great black people in the world. Does it have to be someone who's alive, or can it be somebody who's dead?
I think it could be somebody who's dead.
It could be anybody.
Okay.
He doesn't even have to be black.
Who's your favorite person?
We'll make the question easier for you. Who do you like? Who do you like best on this podcast?
Do you like Jason? Check here for yes.
My favorite black person. I guess my favorite black person is not only dead, but not wasn't really black anymore, so it would have to be Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson.
He was a great black man, and he was also a great white woman.
So now, there are some people who think Thriller is Michael Jackson's best album, and there are some people who think Off the Wall is Michael Jackson's best album. Where do you, or maybe another one, where do you fall in that? Although if you say Invincible is his best album, we're hanging up on you.
I'm an Off the Wall guy.
Yeah. Good, I like it.
Same here. Yeah. Off the Wall, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the first records I owned when I was a kid. And it's a great album. And it doesn't have The Girl Is Mine on it.
I like The Girl Is Mine.
That's true.
Oh, Jason.
Now, Mike, another thing that we're going to do is we, all three of us, grew up in very, very white neighborhoods. And Jeff, being in New Hampshire, I'm sure still does.
Oh, yeah.
And even though Jason and I live in cities, you know, we're still not as familiar with the black experience. So we'd like to also do a segment called Ask a Black Person.
Okay.
Please explain Tyler Perry.
Tyler Perry's appeal, there is a segment of black American women that really like gospel music. And from what I understand, Tyler Perry used to tour the country with a lot of, he wrote a lot of plays that toured the country, and they appealed primarily to black women of a certain age. And I think that's how he sort of laid the groundwork for his popularity now. I still think that's an overwhelmingly large section of his audience. I've never watched any of his plays or seen any of his movies. I have watched his TV show a couple of times, and it's painful.
Tyler Perry's House of Painful?
Yeah, they should call it that.
Yeah, this is something that personally I've always wanted to ask you.
Uh-huh.
you're not only black,
correct,
but you are, like me, you're a Yankee fan.
I am.
And unlike me, you are gay.
Yep.
And you live in Boston.
Yep.
So my question to you is, how are you still alive? I mean, you've got a city that's famous for hating on any one of those three groups.
Yeah, I guess being all three at once, it just confuses people so much that they don't bother me.
They get disoriented. They cancel each other out.
Like, you're what? And what? And what?
That's what he should be getting. That's what he should be getting the award for. Forget racial diversity at Poptoast. He should be getting an award for still being alive in Boston.
Still being alive in Boston, and actually having the balls to wear a Yankee cap in public.
Wow, this is great. So this means that we can have you back on when we do a is there a Gay History Month?
There's Gay Pride Month, which is June.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant. Gay Pride.
Yes.
Month. I should know that. I'm in the theater. My bad.
And you're in New York.
That's right. Yes.
That could be the month where you debut It's Raining Men at an acoustic 80s show.
No mention of acoustic 80s. No mention of acoustic 80s. Don't do it. But that would be a good idea.
Okay, here's a question for you.
Okay.
Who's the cat who won't come out when this danger all about?
That would be Shaft.
Okay. Very good. 10 points to you.
Damn right.
Damn right. All right, Mike, I just have a bunch of quick questions. I just want you to answer yes or no.
Okay.
Do you know Wayne Brady?
I don't.
Mary J. Blige?
I don't.
Bill Cosby?
I do not.
Tupac?
I met him once.
Aunt Jemima?
I don't think Aunt Jemima is a real person.
Uncle Ben?
I don't.
That's it. I just wanted to know, because you know, you always joke that like all the black people have, you know, like underground meetings or something. I just wanted to know if you knew any of them.
Well, I mean, we think the same thing about white people. I mean,
well, but we do. We do. The Jews do. It's called Temple. We go in there and complain about everything.
Huh.
And then we bring it back to the podcast, right, Dave?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So you did meet Tupac once.
I did.
Tell us about that.
It was sort of peripheral. I mean, I didn't actually like walk up to him and say hi, but I was working in Tower Records in the fall of 93, and he came into the store one Sunday morning and bought his own CD single.
That's great. That's cool.
And it was it was an interesting experience. I mean, it was before he had like security or anything like that. I mean, I think was with maybe a couple of record company people or an assistant, and he just came in, did a little shopping, bought a single and left, and that was it.
Jeff, do you have another? I think you might have another question.
Oh, that's right. I wanted to ask Mike if Black Dinner Time was really the way it looked in Eddie Murphy's The Nutty Professor.
You got him.
Please don't hang up.
I don't know how to answer that question. I mean, my personal dinner time, as it stands now, is nothing like that.
Nobody calls you Hercules?
Nobody calls me Hercules. But there are similarities to dinners that I have with my family.
The farting, or...?
the farting takes place after dinner.
Okay, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah, we've got enough manners to not fart actually at the dinner table.
Oh, wow.
But there are some similarities, and just the you know, large group of people and the kind of obnoxious conversation and the food, obviously.
So then it's a little like today, just with food.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any challenging questions. I was just curious if there's anything in pop culture that you feel as like, you know, an African American that you're supposed to like that you don't like.
The term African American.
Okay. Okay, so I retract my African American. I'll ask you this question in two ways.
My African American.
Either as a black man or a gay man, or as a black gay man, which I guess that's just the cop and the village people, I guess. But as a black man or a gay man, is there anything that, like, in the pop culture that you feel like you're supposed to like that you don't care for?
I don't like techno.
Okay. We respect you.
I mean, I don't like what they call, like, Eurofag music. Like, I mean, basically anything they play in, like, a gay bar or a gay club.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, more stuff offends my sensibilities from, like, a gay standpoint than from a black standpoint.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, yeah, I mean, most of the stuff that black folks like, I like, too.
Okay.
I mean, I like basketball. I like chicken. I like hip-hop.
So you're saying you don't like show tunes unless they're being sung by Lena Horne?
Oh, I don't like show tunes at all.
Oh, okay.
I think Jason is now officially gayer than you.
You said it, not me.
Okay, you want a really offensive question?
Come on, yeah. Somebody give me a 10. I want somebody to give me a question that's going to, you know, going to make me militant.
What's your favorite flavor of Kool-Aid?
Oh man. Well, first of all, I can't drink Kool-Aid anymore because I'm diabetic. What is my favorite flavor of Kool-Aid? I mean, we don't really, like, I don't personally, like, know them by flavors. I mean, there's just, like, red Kool-Aid, the and colors. There's, like, yeah, purple right. Kool-Aid. And...
Yeah. It's better anyway, because they never taste like what they're supposed to taste like.
Exactly.
That always bothered me as a kid. That in high C, it's like you smelled it, and it smelled awesome, and then you taste it, and you're like, this doesn't taste anywhere near what it smelled like.
Well, I just love that scene in Crooklyn where the little girl keeps, like, pouring tons of sugar. She's just, like, making the Kool-Aid. Just, like, what's, like, the whole bag of sugar in the mix?
But I would have to say red Kool-Aid is my favorite flavor.
Here's one for you.
Okay.
This better be good, Dave.
And this question was first asked by Madeline Kahn in Blazing Saddles. Is it true what they say about you people? That you are gifted?
Ask your mother. That's what you're supposed to say to him.
No, he'd have to be like, ask your father.
If only I'd have thought of that 30 seconds ago. Right.
What does malt liquor taste like, by the way?
Honestly, I've never tasted malt liquor before, believe it or not.
You're not a very good black man.
Hey.
That's why he writes for Pop-Tos.
Exactly. I've never tasted malt liquor. I assume it tastes like crap. That's what I've heard from everyone else that I know who's had it before.
You You are listening to Pop Toes.
And now it's time for the endorsement section of the podcast, and we will start off with Jeff.
Well, as it turns out, my you know, when you ask me about endorsements, my answer usually has something to do with stuff that I'm reviewing at the time. And my review queue lately has matched up perfectly with this month's topic, because the three best things I've reviewed lately are the documentary Soul Power, which I don't know how much you know about it or if you've seen it.
I know about it. I didn't see it.
You got to see it. The movie Black Dynamite, which you also have to see, and the box set that Rhino Handmade just put out, 6 CDs, 7 hours and 45 minutes worth of Wilson Pickett, everything he did for Atlantic.
That's awesome.
A lot of Wilson Pickett.
That is a lot of Wilson Pickett. But like, Wilson Pickett was, I think, known primarily, as a lot of those guys were, as a singles artist. And so you would think a box of his stuff that goes on for almost 200 songs is going to run out of steam pretty quickly, but it holds up pretty well until just about the end when he started doing, you know, disco.
Gotcha. That was,
that's when it falls off. But if you spend only $100 on lavish box sets this year, then spend it on that.
All right.
It's called Funky Midnight Mover.
Yeah. Why don't you also talk about Soul Power a little bit? Because I don't think a lot of people know what that is, and that sounds like a really, really cool movie.
Yeah, well, you were talking about Ali. There was a it's about a festival that took place kind of peripherally to the Rumble in the Jungle. These guys, I think when they talked about doing the Rumble in the Jungle, there were some concerns about money. They wanted to be able to come up with some more money, and so some guys came up with the idea to have a festival. A music festival that took place for, I think, 3 days around the fight. And they got B.B. King, they got Bill Withers, they got Miriam Makeba, they got Celia Cruz, a whole bunch of artists.
Like every giant in black music.
Yeah, and James Brown, of course. And then, you know, they got it all set up. They got the arena, they got all these people out there, they got the artists out there. And then I think... you probably know the history of this better than I do, but Foreman was injured somehow at the last minute, cut his hand or something stupid, and he had to push the fight back 6 weeks.
Right.
But it was too late to reschedule the festival, so they went ahead and did it anyway. But all these camera crews were out there for the fight, and that footage eventually became the movie When We Were Kings. And some of the same footage was used for this movie, Soul Power, which is... you know, there's no narration or anything. It's just a collection of performances and a behind-the-scenes look at the way it came together. But it's just incredible. I mean, you think, like, James Brown in 1974, to me, is not... That is not James Brown at his peak. But to watch him, I mean, it's hard to believe that is not the man at the peak of his powers, because it was amazing. B.B. King was amazing. Everybody just... It's... watching it, I was angered that A, it wasn't the biggest thing on the planet when it happened, and B, that when the movie finally came out last year, that it was just this little art house thing that almost nobody saw. You know, it should have been a huge hit.
I worked on jobs with my feet in my hands. You know, all the work I did was for the other man. Now we're the man's a chance to do things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall. Working with someone else. Say it loud.
Okay, my endorsement is somebody that this album actually came out a couple of years ago, and it was also featured on the Pop Dos list of the 100 best albums of the decade, and it's...
Don't say Bruce Springsteen.
No, it's The Way I See It by Raphael Sadiq.
Oh yeah, I love that record.
You know, I'm a huge lover of 60s soul, and I'm always really wary of any time I hear something claiming to sound claiming to evoke that time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
This is one of the few times that I think that they really got it right. And what I first heard that just put a smile on my face when I first heard it was that he really understood there were two things that were the key to those great Motown records. This really could have sounds like it could have come out of Motown in 1966. The first is the guitars. It really has that same tone that Marv Tarplin got on records like I'll Be Doggone and Tracks of My Tears. And the second is the sound of that room. The Snake Pit, which was the Motown studio, was the main reason why those records sounded so great. Not just the musicians, but also there was something in that room, and I don't know if it was like he was able to get it on in post-production or what it is, but it just sounds like the Snake Pit.
Yeah. For me, it's the drums.
Yeah, the drums have that sound. It's that thickness in it.
Yeah, the drums don't have a whole lot of dynamic, but they still kind of take up the whole bottom end of that recording. It's just there's something about that style, that sound, and you're right. Usually when somebody goes out of their way to make music that sounds like other music, it usually doesn't come off very well, but these just sound like songs that happen to be written and that ended up sounding that way.
And the fact that he's got that Smokey Robinson voice,
yeah,
too. You know, and the songs are really good too. But yeah, if you listen to the drums on a lot of the Motown records, you never hear cymbals. You'll hear tambourine, but you never hear cymbals.
It's all snare.
Yeah, the snare and the toms and the kick drum.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Rafael Sadiq is one of those guys that I don't think has ever gotten the due that they deserve. I mean, he's been around for 25 years, yep. And the guy's made awesome records in pretty much every style of music there is, and I'm glad that people are finally noticing that he's a really talented guy with this record. It's a shame it took so damn long.
I have not heard the album. Actually, I've actually never heard anything by him. But while we were talking, I went and looked it up on iTunes, and I'm going to buy it.
You've heard a Tony record before?
I have heard. Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot he was the same guy. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I have the single of If I Had No Loop.
You can tell by a smile, she's such a love child. And every man in this place would love to be in her space. As the night settles down, she'll meet a lot of clever clowns.
My endorsement. I'm almost loath to endorse this because the guy who wrote it is such a dick. But I'm gonna endorse Dave Lifton's book.
Whoa!
On Michael Jackson.
Thank you.
Did you actually pick up a copy the other day, or did you just read the whole thing in the bookstore?
I'm not putting any money in Dave Lifton's pocket. His book, Michael Jackson Vault, A Tribute to the King of Pop, 1958 to 2009, by David Lifton. I was in Barnes & Noble the other day, and I was in the city and had like an hour or so to kind of kill, so I figured I'd go hang out in the bookstore and look around. And there was Dave's book in the music section, Michael Jackson Vault. It's essentially a pop-up book.
Let me explain what it is. It's a...
oh, sorry. Go ahead, please.
Well, because now you're saying it's a pop-up book. It's like, let me try to...
It is a pop-up book.
It's a little bit bigger than a coffee table book, like a commemorative souvenir book that has pullouts of replicas of relating to Michael Jackson's career.
Oh, wait a second. You wrote that?
Yeah.
I was in a bookstore like a week ago, and I picked it up and was looking through it and didn't check the spine or anything to see who wrote it.
Well,
shit.
It's actually very difficult to find Dave's name on it, actually.
Yeah.
Because it's not on the cover, and it's not on, like, when you open the book, it's in the foreword that he wrote that has him in a short bio, and he gets some credit at the back of the book.
Yeah, because there were the sidebars were written by other people, because we I did that whole thing in a week. That was like 15,000 words in a week. So like all the sidebars and a lot of the other stuff that was in there, done by other people in the staff. So I don't have full credit, but it does say that I contributed the bulk of the narrative text in the acknowledgments.
Yeah, and the narrative text was really good too. I read as much of it as I could before I had to leave, and it was all really informative. I found out some things that I didn't know, and he put Michael's career in good context. But it is a fun book, and it's an entertaining read, and there's lots of fun things to pop out of it. Not pull out. It's not a pop up book. It's a pull out book. There's lots of cool little things in it. It's a fun thing to have around. So that would be my endorsement for today.
Thank you. And we will definitely have a link to where you can buy that in the show notes.
Really? Will we?
Yes.
Had no idea.
Wow, Dave, my respect level for you just went up like 90 spots.
My respect level just multiplied by 5, but 5 times 0 is still 0, so.
Girl, close your eyes. Let that rhythm get in. That you can do. Relax your mind. Lay back and groove with mine. You gotta feel that heat, and we can ride the boogie. Share that beat of love. I wanna rock with you all night. Dance you into the sunlight.
Okay, Mike, what's your endorsement?
I will say that one thing I'm really interested in is there is a documentary airing on VH1 this coming week about Soul Train. I don't remember the exact title, but it looks really interesting. And Soul Train recently built up a website which actually has archive performances, and I think that they're going to start rolling some of that stuff out on DVD. So that's something I'm excited about. I can't endorse it because most of it isn't out yet. And the documentary hasn't aired, but as far as things that are out recently or things that I'm really looking forward to, that's definitely top of the list, because I was one of those kids who ran to the TV every Saturday morning to watch Soul Train.
Me too. I just found out there's a station that just came on. It's called Centric.
Centric, yes.
Yeah, you were mentioning that on Twitter the other day.
Yeah, because I was just like flipping through. I was like looking for something. I see Soul Train. I'm like, okay. And I just put it on. It was like an episode from 1973 with the Isley Brothers, Betty White, and Junior Walker, and the All-Stars.
Say Betty White?
Betty Wright. I might have said Betty White, but it came out as... I had meant to say Betty Wright. Yeah. And I set the... immediately set the season pass on the TiVo to record it. And it's awesome, because I also used to watch Soul Train growing up. It's like my sister would watch Bandstand because it had the Barry Manilow theme, but me, I'm upstairs in my parents' room watching Soul Train because I like the cartoon train. But yeah, that was but Soul Train was like a huge part of my musical upbringing too.
Well, it'll be on February 6th, and this show goes live on the 5th, so it'll it still won't be on when this goes on, but everybody can watch it tomorrow.
It's your thing. Do what you wanna do. I can't tell you who to sock it to. It's your thing. Do what you wanna do. I can't tell you who to sock it to. If you want me to love you, maybe I'll wait. Believe me, woman, it ain't no big deal.
And that's going to do it for this special episode of the Pop Does Podcast. Thank you to Mike for being our own awesome black person and for taking our humor in the spirit with which it was intended.
It's my pleasure. If you get a call from the NAACP, it wasn't me.
Okay.
I always say that, and I think I've said this to other people before, but you know, I don't want to be friends with anybody who can't poke some fun at themselves, and so you're all right in my book, Mike.
Oh, thanks, Jason. You're okay in mine, too.
And join us next month in March when we celebrate St. Patrick's Day with a salute to the Irish. As always, you can find back episodes of the show at iTunes. While there, please leave a review of the show because it does help give the show greater exposure. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/popdose. In the show notes, you'll find links to all the things that we talked about today and a link to the Facebook page for fans of the podcast. Jason, Jeff, and Mike, do you have anything left to add?
I love you guys.
Oh, keep it real.
And also Acoustic 80s.
Acoustic 80s. See you guys next month.
All right.
Thanks again, guys.
Thanks.
Peace out. I just figured I should end that way just for...
Word to your mother. Word to your mother. That's actually the way it's going, because it's a mother joke, too. You know, what I always thought is the funny thing about some of the greatest songs, I'm sure I've talked about this before, the greatest songs on Off the Wall, some of the greatest songs were written by Rod Temperton.
Yep.
Same with Thriller, who's a white guy.
Who is a white British guy.
Yes, that's right, white and British. Yep. He was in Heatwave.
Heatwave.
In Heatwave,
and if
yep.
you look at, I talked about this on a Chart Attack, but if you look at the video for Grooveline, you can barely see him in the back. They hid him so far in the back. Like, you are going to ruin our rep, man. You sit back and you hide your face behind those keys.
Took away all the street cred.
Right, exactly. No, I was going to say, Heatwave doesn't care about white people.
All right. Yeah. No, he's one of a long line of British men and women who have a lot of soul.
That's like the Jews writing all the Christmas songs.
Yeah.
I wish you were Jewish, Mike.
So,
I think after Nell Carter died, I think she was the last black Jew in existence.